This is Bob, and today I'm talking with Applied Limnologist Chris Filstrom, who works at the University of Minnesota Natural Resources Research Institute in Hermantown. Chris is a lake scientist specializing in the study of harmful algal blooms, nutrient cycling in lakes, nutrient reduction strategies, and freshwater resources management. His research takes him from small farm ponds to Lake Superior. He also specializes in working with large data sets to investigate how climate and land use interactions affect the water quality across the continental United States. Chris also directs the Central Analytical Laboratory, a state-certified water chemistry lab. Members of his team specialize in lake and stream monitoring and assessment and high-resolution monitoring networks, analytical chemistry, and algal identification. He has a B.S. degree in biology from the University of Texas at Austin, a Ph.D. from Baylor University, and has done postdoc work at Iowa State University. Go Cyclones. Chris, welcome to KTWH Radio.
Hi, Bob. Thanks. Glad to be here.
Let's start with you. I mean, I just read that you got your degrees in Austin and, I guess, Waco, Texas. Did you grow up in Texas?
I grew up outside of Austin, Texas as a really small child, but I grew up most of my life in St. Joseph, Michigan. Ah. So in the southwestern corner of Michigan where the St. Joseph River comes into Lake Michigan.
Okay.
And that's where I did all of my, like, my education from elementary school all the way through high school before going to the University of Texas.
Okay. That sounds good. Do you have any idea, anything that you can think of that gave you an interest in science and the study of lakes and streams?
Yeah, I kind of feel like I was always interested in science from an early age. Yeah. Where I grew up in St. Joseph, Michigan, we had a house that had a huge ravine going down to a river valley behind it. And I remember as a kid, I used to go down to these little ponds and wetlands we had down there, and I would take water samples, and my dad had like a really old microscope with a single eyepiece the little mirror that you had to adjust to get the lighting right. And I would always look at like these little organisms and draw them using his microscope. So I think that was naturally what got me interested in science.
Okay, I like that. One thing I like to ask people is, are there any people that you would like to acknowledge that kind of were a great help to you as you decided on this path to becoming a limnologist?
Yeah, well, I always like to thank my grandfather, who he had some shoreline property on Lake Michigan. So, you know, when I was growing up, we just always used to spend time on the lake. And I was a pretty avid angler growing up on Lake Michigan. It was mostly yellow perch and things like that.
Yep.
But I remember going out with like my father, my grandfather, and a bunch of my cousins to go fishing every year on the lake. And that's what I really love to do. So I thank him for kind of instilling that. I think my mother had a love for nature that kind of carried over with me. And then I think, you know, as I went through my schooling, I had a lot of really great, like, natural science teachers in high school. But it really wasn't until I got to University of Texas, Austin, and I took this weird course in something called limnology that I knew nothing about. And I remember pulling, this is back when you had to like actually open a dictionary and look things up. I remember looking up the word limnology and being like, what the heck is that? And it was like, limnology is the study of freshwater ecosystems. And to me, I thought that was the coolest thing ever because the other part of the class was oceanography, you know, yep. And as a kid growing up in the Midwest, what the heck do I know about the oceans? You know, I didn't grow up on the East Coast, West Coast.
Yep.
And so I was like, I just don't have that background on oceanography. But when that limnology term came up, I'm like, I spent my whole childhood on the Great Lakes. I know a little something about this.
Yeah.
And I remember it being one of the hardest courses I ever took in my life, but oh, wow, did I learn so much in that course.
I got it. Let's bounce right up to your the NRRI and what you're doing these days. Can you give us a kind of a big picture of what kinds of things that you've been working on?
Yeah, I think in our lab, we deal a lot with water quality issues, and that's on a really diverse range of topics.
Sure.
It could be dealing with nutrient pollution, such as phosphorus or nitrogen or enrichment of our lakes and streams. I spend a lot of time really working on cyanobacterial dynamics. And cyanobacteria are also known as blue-green algae.
Yeah.
But they're a type of algae where some strains of algae can produce toxins that make people sick and kill a lot of dogs within the state every year. And so that's really a problem that we've been focused on, because in the southern part of the state, these things are kind of normal. And in lakes down south, in lots of agricultural settings, you tend to see cyanobacteria year after year.
Okay.
But the interesting thing is up here in Duluth and up in some of the remote, like boundary water lakes, we're just starting to see cyanobacteria now. So this is something that we never thought we would have to deal with as a water quality issue. So it's really an emerging problem that people are getting really serious about.
Got it.
So that's another aspect. And then we also work on the Great Lakes. And one of the projects that we've been working on lately is called, it's really interested in looking at contaminant spatial distributions and temporal trends in the sediments of the Great Lakes.
Okay.
To try to figure out, are there certain depositional hotspots for different kind of contaminants within the Great Lakes? Everything from like PFAS that people are hearing a lot about to pesticides, herbicides, different semi-volatile organic compounds, and a whole host of other things.
Yeah, I saw an article, and that's what kind of got me interested in giving you a jingle, about the study in Lake Superior. It's a multi-year study, as I gather, and along with Bridget Ulrich. And that project sounded interesting to me, too. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so we're working on a project funded by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, their Great Lakes National Program Office. But it's basically to get a survey of what contaminants are looking like within the sediments of the Great Lakes. So where are they spatially accumulating? What kind of levels are we seeing them at? Are they at levels where we would get concerned that there's some kind of like health concern there? We're also taking deep sediment cores throughout each of the Great Lakes. And when we take the sediment cores, we can section them really finely, and we can go back and look at what the different contaminant levels have been like through time. So we can start seeing, with certain kinds of contaminants, when do we start seeing them accumulate in the sediment? Does that match with what we know about like industrial manufacturing use of these chemicals? Are the trends increasing, or are they actually decreasing because of all the management interventions being done to basically reduce their use and transport in the environment, their pollution? And so, yeah, that's really what we're focused on in that project. And I should say that this is like a really big collaboration here at the University of Minnesota Duluth. We have everyone from organic geochemists to paleolimnologists to microbial ecologists. You mentioned Bridget Ulrich earlier. She's a trace organics chemist and an environmental chemist leading all of those efforts. But really what we want to do is we want to piece all these different puzzle pieces together to figure out really what's driving the fate and transport of these chemicals? So can we figure out what their original sources were? And then can we figure out the environmental conditions that are contributing to their transport within the lake and eventually where they end up in the sediments of each of those lakes?
Okay. All right. Well, here's probably a toughie. Let's take a shot at it anyway. I got the notion from what I read that you folks are using some highly technical analytical tools to do this work. Can you give us any kind of a watered-down description of some of the key tools that you're using and what they're able to do?
Yeah, I think it's such a diverse project that we are using a whole host of tools depending on what we're looking at. So, like, for looking at heavy metals analysis and things like that, we use an instrument called an ICP-OES, which basically has a way to quantify the different metals that we're looking at.
Okay.
It does a total digest of the sediments and then quantifies each of the individual, 27 of the individual elements within that sample.
Okay.
Just based on this instrumentation. That's one example. Bridget Ulrich, her team uses a whole host of mass spectrometers. There's several different examples of that. I don't know if I want to get into that because Bridget could do that much better than me.
Okay, well, that's fair. I'll just say that mass spectrometers are often used to identify and measure the amounts of organic contaminants. And I'd also like to say that Bridget would definitely be the right one to ask for any gory details. Let's shift gears then. Before we tie this thing up, I don't want to blow a lot of your day, but do you have any maybe advice for people who are just starting out with an eye toward pursuing a career in science and maybe even in limnology?
Yeah, I think my key is just, really following a career path that you're excited about and having that enthusiasm for science and not losing it. As you continue out in your career, we start out, I think, as scientists because we ask good questions. We're like, why is that lake green and this lake blue and those lakes are right by each other? That's kind of the curiosity that builds like a scientific mindset.
Sure.
And so I think the more and more we go on in science, the more and more we learn, right? So we start learning, this lake is green because there's lots of algae growing because you have more and more nutrients and that's related to land use. And maybe this lake is bluer because you're not getting as many nutrients in it or it's deeper or clearer or whatever it may be. We start kind of unraveling some of that mystery that really got us excited about science. I think the good thing about it is those people that have these really sustained careers in science is once you learn more and more, that generates more and more questions, right? So
you
start out with this really simple question. Well, it doesn't seem simple at the time, but as you go on, it seems simple. And then you start building complexity into that, but you keep generating new questions that you pursue. And I think that's really kind of my key is not to lose that love of nature. Don't lose that enthusiasm for science. And, if you're excited about something, tell someone about it. It's funny. I talk about this in my lab all the time. And sometimes, you really get into like the logistics of doing the work, right? Like, I want to quantify this chemical, so I have to do this extraction, and then I got to feed it into this instrument, and I have to make sure the quality control procedures are good, and then it spits out a bunch of data that then I have to analyze statistically. And so sometimes it can seem rather repetitive and things like that, but don't lose your love for the science, and tell people if you're excited about something to build kind of that support, because there's other people that will get excited about it as well. And I think, one of the misnomers we think about scientists a lot of times, right, is that scientists really don't have people skills, and we tend to like to be isolated and work alone and like, don't bother me. But the thing I really enjoy the most about science are those personal relationships I built with people who share that same curiosity and passion for science. So there are others out there. If you feel like you're the only one that gets really excited about something, trust me, you are not. And there is a great community out there for you.
Well, that is a great answer. And I want to thank you a lot for talking with us today. And I hope that you have a good season out there. I imagine you'll be back out on the lake. Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I always love talking about science, so thank you for this opportunity.
Oh, it was my pleasure. And that was limnologist Chris Filstrup from the NRRI.